I'll get this meeting of the Labor and Industry Finance and Policy Committee called order for today, March 28th. And we do now have a quorum. Am I right? Yeah. Representative Meckland, we've got two sets of minutes here. Do you, from the
21st and the 23rd?
Yep, and the 21st, where there was a mistake. I believe you were left off of the 20th.
You are correct, Mr. Chair. Yes,
do you want to move the minutes of the 21st?
I move the minutes from the 21st.
Motion has been made to move the minutes from approval of the minutes from March 21st. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are approved. And now we have the minutes from March 23rd. And your name's on this time.
We all appear to be there.
We all appear to be there.
I so move the minutes from the 23rd, Mr. Chair.
Representative Meckland moves the approval of the minutes from March 23rd. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's approved. Members, today we're going to be rolling out and discussing the DE amendment that's going to be our bill for our finance bill for the committee this year. And so I'm going to do that from here. We have testifiers. Thursday we're going to do the markup and amendments and go forward from there. So today we're just going to take testimony and discussion. So I'll move House File 2755 to be before the committee. And first person I have on my list is the commissioner. Staff do the walkthrough. Ms. Schoen. Ms. Roberts. The other way on my list, that's okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to just quickly walk you through the spreadsheet. So if everybody has that. The first agency that's funded through this bill is the Bureau of Mediation Services, and that's for a total of $7.5 million. You'll see there's two change items. One is an operating adjustment, and then also the $1.5 million increase for the Public Employment Relations Board. And moving on to the Department of Labor and Industry, the first program is the Workers' Compensation Program. There are two change items, totaling just over $7 million, an operating adjustment, and the technology services reorganization. This funding all comes from the Workers' Compensation Fund. And so the total direct appropriation is $30.9 million. Next, we have the Construction Codes and Licensing Program. This comes from the Construction Codes Fund, and you'll see there's five change items totaling $1.3 million, including the climate sub-cabinet, electric vehicle charging infrastructure, existing buildings, energy efficiency, safe housing for the elderly, and window cleaning safety. The next program is General Support, which is funded through the Workers' Compensation Fund, and again, two change items, the operating adjustment and the technology services reorganization, totaling $5.8 million in changes and total funding of $17.9 million. The next program is the Labor Standards Program, and you'll see that there are several change items here, totaling $2.6 million. Just to highlight some of them, there's the safety of agricultural and food processing workers. That was House File 70, Representative Hansen's bill, the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, House File 908, Representative Agbaje's bill, $27,000 for a workplace poster veterans benefits. That was Representative Liz Lagarde's bill. And then finally, the Safe Workplaces for Meat and Poultry Processing, House File 23, Representative Wolgamott's bill. And then you'll see as we move down, there is also funding from the Workforce Development Fund. And I'll note here, and then the next item is that a new division has been created. So the funding for the LEAP grants and apprenticeship-related spending has been moved to a new apprenticeship division. So you'll see that there is a transfer to that new division of about $2.7 million. So moving on to the new division of apprenticeship, there is $9.6 million in change items from the Workforce Development Fund, and this does include not only the transfer and the LEAP grants, but also three bills, the Helmets to Hard Hats, Representative Norris's bill, Career Pathways Program of Representative Liz Lagarde's bill, and then finally the Apprenticeship Preparation, which is Representative Burke's bill. for $800,000. So that's a total of 9.6 in change items. Moving now to the combative sports office, there is a change of $497,000. This office has been funded through the special revenue fund and will continue to receive special revenue funds, but there is an addition of some general fund money for this office. For workplace safety, this division is funded through the workers' compensation fund and the general fund. You can see the change items from the workers' compensation fund include the regulation of ergonomic industries, and then Representative Greenman's bill, House Bill 36. This is the warehouse distribution worker safety bill. And then finally, under the general fund, there's the general fund piece for the ergonomic industries. And then I should note on line 118 that I should have deleted that, the House Bill 23 that's funded in an earlier division. Moving on to workforce development issues, again from the workforce development fund, you can see this is the division that includes the pipeline and youth skills grants. And there is a change item, an increase of $1.5 million for growing youth skills training program. And so for the total for the Department of Labor and Industry, the total general fund direct spending is just over $12 million. And the total for all funds, both direct and open, is $218 million. And then the final agency in this bill is the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, funded through the Workers' Compensation Fund, and that's a total of $5.1 million.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. And now Ms. Scholin.
Chair and members, Anna Scholin, House Research. I'll be walking through the policy provisions in the bill, beginning with Article 2. So Article 2 is based on House File 70 from Rep. Hansen. This is the agricultural and food processing workers language. It makes various changes to the safety and labor standards for agricultural and food processing workers under the Migrant Labor Law, Packing House Workers Bill of Rights, and Recruitment and Food Processing and Employment Laws. Article 3, which is based on House File 9808 from Representative Agbaje, this is nursing home workforce standards language. It establishes the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board and requires the board to adopt rules adopting minimum employment standards for nursing home workers. It also provides for training, notice, and enforcement provisions. Article 4. This is based on House File 10 from Representative Liz Lagarde. This is the Petroleum Refinery Skilled Workers language. It creates a new requirement that at least a certain percent of the employees of any contractor working at a petroleum refinery must have experience with a registered apprenticeship program in the applicable trade. It establishes fines and compliance authority. Article 5, this is based on the governor's bill, and it is language about combative sports, making a variety of technical changes to the combative sports licensing system that the agency will cover in more detail, I'm sure. Article 6, this is also from the governor's bill, plus language from House File 981 from Representative Hicks, House File 2164 from Representative Kraft, and House File 2633 from Representative Liz Lagarde. This is a miscellaneous policy provisions article that makes various policy and technical changes to labor and industry provisions. Sections 1 through 6, 9, 10, and 30 create a new division of apprenticeships separate from the Division of Labor Standards and removes obsolete language. Section 7 modifies the LEAP grant program to focus on retaining and recruiting BIPOC individuals and women in registered apprenticeship programs. Section 8 requires DLI to prepare a veterans benefits and services poster for employers with 50 or more employees. Sections 11 through 16 make conforming changes to MNOSHA penalties to match federal law. Section 17 establishes an ergonomics program under MNOSHA and requires all healthcare facilities and warehouse distribution centers or meatpacking sites with 100 or more employees to implement an ergonomics program meeting certain requirements. Sections 18 and 19 reduce the construction codes and licensing reinstatement fees. Sections 20 through 23 and 27 make changes to the requirements for electric vehicle charging infrastructure under the state building code. Section 24 modifies the definition under the state building code to include assisted living facilities with dementia care. Section 25 requires the commissioner to consider and incrementally adopt model commercial energy codes to move towards 80% or greater reduction in annual net energy consumption by 2036. Sections 26 and 29 modify the state building code to adopt by rule requirements for adult size changing facilities and a national window cleaning standard. Section 28 modifies contractor licensing requirements related to solar installation. Moving on to Article 7, this is based on House File 62 from Chair Nelson. This is Public Employment Relations Board data provisions. Make changes to PERB data access and classification. Article 8, based on House File 23 from Representative Wolgamott, this is the meat and poultry processing workers' safety language. It creates the Safe Worker Places for Meat and Poultry Workers Act, requiring various worker safety protections at meatpacking operations with 50 or more employees. And finally, Article 9, this is based on House File 36 from Representative Greenman. This is warehouse distribution worker safety language. It establishes worker safety requirements for warehouse distribution centers, including notice of any quotas. That is the policy contained in this bill, as amended.
Thank you for that. And now, to our testifiers. First person I have on my list is Commissioner Blislebach. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Nicole Blislebach, and I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I am pleased to speak in support of many provisions in the bill, and I appreciate the inclusion of the governor's budget recommendations for the department, as they support our economy, improve worker protections, and enable the agency to better meet the needs of the Minnesotans we serve. I appreciate the inclusion of key provisions in the bill that support working families, such as investing in prevailing wage education and compliance, which helps ensure that projects funded with public money be constructed and maintained by the best means and highest quality of labor available, and that people working on public projects be compensated according to the real value of the services they perform. Strengthening existing workplace protections for agricultural and food processing workers so they are protected and aware of their rights. And finally, investing in outreach related to workplace rights and obligations under the Women's Economic Security Act. I also appreciate the inclusion of provisions in the bill that help address workforce challenges and develop a skilled and diverse workforce. These include increasing LEAP grants to better support participation and retention of women, people of color, and indigenous people in registered apprenticeship programs, increasing funds for youth skills training grants and administration to support more partnerships among school districts, employers, and community organizations to offer meaningful work experience to 16 and 17-year-old student learners. Separating the Division of Labor Standards and Apprenticeship into two separate divisions to best support program operations. I appreciate the provisions in the bill that help to protect Minnesotans' health and safety, including keeping Minnesota OSHA penalties in line with federal OSHA for employers that fail to provide safe and healthy workplaces for their workers. This will ensure continued federal funding and will encourage employers to comply with workplace safety and health standards. Establishing a nursing home workforce standards board, responsible for setting minimum standards necessary to improve recruitment and retention and protect the health and welfare of nursing home workers. Establishing a program and team within DLI to address workforce ergonomic injuries through training, education, and enforcement in the warehouse, meatpacking, and healthcare industries. Providing ergonomic safety grants to employers so that they can invest in specific equipment or practices that will reduce the risk of injury to employees and prevent musculoskeletal disorders. Sorry, can't talk today. By enabling DLI to provide construction code reviews and inspections of assisted living facilities statewide to ensure that facilities designed for the elderly and vulnerable adults meet minimum safety standards. by modifying the state building code requirement for window cleaning safety to incorporate safe window cleaning methods recognized by national safety standard. Improving safety at oil refineries by requiring that a certain percentage of the contractor workforce be participants in or graduates from registered apprenticeship programs. Making statutory changes to the Office of Combative Sports to better protect combatant safety and health. I appreciate the provisions in the bill that help mitigate climate change, including instituting an adoption framework for the Commercial Energy Code such that buildings can achieve an 80% reduction in annual net energy consumption compared to 2004 baseline by 2036. Adding requirements to the Minnesota State Building Code for electric vehicle charging stations within or adjacent to new commercial and multifamily buildings. Funding the growth of apprenticeship opportunities in clean economy occupations. Finally, I appreciate the inclusion of provisions that improve the department's ability to deliver quality services to our stakeholders, such as reducing certain construction codes and licensing fees to align more closely with the services provided and allowing DLI to refund contractor recovery fund fees when an applicant does not receive a license. Reorganizing how information technology costs are distributed at DLI so that each work unit pays for the resources that they use, and providing additional funding to maintain our current level of service delivery at DLI and offset inflationary pressures. DLI's goal in our budget was to support working families, develop a skilled and diverse workforce, protect Minnesotans' health and safety, work towards mitigating climate change, and improve service delivery at the agency. I just want to say thank you to Chair Nelson for bringing a bill that can help make all of these goals a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see there's somebody here from Bureau of Mediation Services. Do they want to, they're not on my list, but do they want to speak? And I see them shaking your head. No? Fine. They're not on the list, so I just wanted to make sure. The next person I have on my list is Travis Redinger. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair. And thank you, committee, for listening to my testimony today for the combat sports bill. My name is Travis Redinger. I serve as a doctor of nursing practice and work as a critical care nurse practitioner here in St. Paul. I've also been involved in Minnesota combat sports scene since roughly 2004, so I have many years of being both a professional fighter, a corner, a trainer, and a friend to many competitors. I've also been working in the medical field as long as I've been involved in combat sports and have a passion for competitor safety and education. Before there was a commission or standards in the state, I would help out at events working as an EMT, so there was some type of medical provider there for fighter safety. In the past few years, I was asked to help assist with some medical research projects with competitors, and I've also traveled the U.S. as a fighter and corner, which has given the opportunity to experience other states' commissions and regulatory boards or lack thereof, and the types of problems and monitoring there was for fighters. With close to 20 years experience and passion for both the medical field and combat sports, I was recently asked to sit on the Combat Sports Advisory Council, since I have one of the very few people who have expertise in both the medical setting and the combat sports setting. Part of my duty in life as a professional is to have empathy and understanding for others. Now, I understand how for some people combat sports may not be appealing to them or have interest in them, but as a professional, it is my duty to care for others, despite my thoughts regarding their actions and decisions. I am to care for others and give them equal treatment towards reducing injury and bettering their health, regardless if I agree with their choices and activities or hobbies. It is my duty to the public to refrain from letting my personal feelings and opinions from impacting their lives and care. And as professionals, I feel we have the same responsibility with combat sports athletes, which is why I wish to be involved in the council. I may not agree with how some fighters decide to live their lives and train, but as a professional, I believe I can help protect them from further damage and limit the amount of potential harm they encounter as an athlete in a sport they enjoy. A way for me to do this has been by supporting the council and also supporting this bill so it can better serve the sports community with improved regulation and safety standards for competitors and athletes. Safety guidelines have been set by other sports through the years and are ever-changing as new research helps us to understand the effects on competitors' bodies and long-term. With the ever-growing global popularity of combat sports, I think it's time we recognize that our community deserves to have the same guidance and structure in place to prevent unnecessary harm to combat sports athletes that are both our friends, family, and loved ones in our community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next person on my list is Mark Nelson. You've got a good last name.
Nelson.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Mark Nelson. Excuse me. I'm a professional boxing referee from St. Paul. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of the combative sports appropriation and policy provisions in House File 2755. I've had the privilege to officiate close to 3,000 amateur and nearly 1,000 professional boxing matches internationally that include over 110 world title fights throughout the United States and 19 different countries. I know firsthand how important it is to have policies in place that are consistent with other jurisdictions, primarily for the welfare and the safety of the boxers and their families. Being a pro referee for 31 years, I was happy to learn of the potential changes, especially since Minnesota has become a popular location for nationally televised bouts such as Showtime and other high-profile networks. From my perspective, the proposed changes are beneficial and necessary, not only for the safety and welfare of the boxers, but also to ensure that Minnesota's combative sports regulations are consistent with other combative sports jurisdictions. A majority of the people involved, such as promoters, boxers, trainers, are the same individuals traveling from state to state and countries alike. These changes will help ensure that the state gets appropriate fees from promoters and prevent unnecessary time and cost to the commission and state associated with the appeal and challenge process. With regards to safety and welfare of the boxers, it's important to note that blood work, physicals, and pregnancy tests should be mandatory to prevent any unnecessary harm. The request to obtain results from amateur boxers will help monitor their records, their experience, and their injuries. This is currently being done with several other states and should be done here as well. Regarding challenges of a contest, currently almost any type of grievance or appeal can be submitted. The work involved having the commission review and notify all parties with documented communication and then have each of them review and reply with documented responses is very time consuming and costly. The three specific alleged reasons for challenges should be put in place so valuable time and resources are not wasted. The boxing community is a close-knit family. All the coaches and officials, including judges and timekeepers, started in the amateurs, volunteering their time with no pay. Regardless of the type of event, however, whether it's small club show or a large nationally televised professional event, we're all fully vested and truly care about the outcome and the well-being of everyone involved. I'm very confident in saying that we all hope this bill can move forward so our Minnesota combative sports can continue to operate safely and skillfully. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Adam Dunnick. The next person I have is Teresa Bates. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the House Labor Committee. My name is Adam Dunnick. I'm here on behalf of the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. It's a pleasure to be here today in support of House File 2755, and I just want to highlight a couple of high points. The Commissioner touched on a few of them, but I just want to talk about a few that we are strongly in support of. The first set of appropriations have to do with the funding of the wage and hour divisions, both the wage theft unit as well as prevailing wage enforcement. And as everybody in this committee knows and has heard from us a lot, these issues matter a lot to our members. It's both about workers getting paid fairly as well as having a level playing field for businesses who are also playing by the rules. Secondly is the OSHA federal conformity item as well. That's an important change we believe in the department. We've been working with them on that for a number of years and nudging them that way, urging them to look that direction, and are very strongly in support of the federal conformity. It can also mean more resources for the state Department of Labor and Industry as well. And then the last point that I want to quick mention is around the LEAP grants, as well as the funding for career pathways and building strong communities. These dollars go a long way at this time for us to both help recruit the members we're going to need to build all the infrastructure for the state, the projects that both are happening through the state as well as the private projects. Recruitment has never been more of an opportunity but also a challenge, and so the more exposure to people to the career in the construction trades, the better. And these are the kinds of programs where a little bit goes a long ways for lowering barriers and getting people exposed to the construction industry. But with that, Mr. Chair, I just want to wrap up, say thank you. Thank you to the committee. You guys have taken on some big issues this session, and we look forward to staying engaged on them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Teresa Bates. And the next person after that is Stacy Miller. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. My name is Teresa Bates. I live in Roseville. I'm a housekeeper at the Estates at Roseville Care Center. I am here on behalf of my union, SEIU Healthcare Minnesota in Iowa. We support the A23 Delete Everything Amendment to House File 2755, the House Labor Budget Bill. In particular, we support Article 3, the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board and its funding. I worked in long-term care for almost 25 years. Short staffing has never been worse. At my facility, we have two housekeepers to do the work that four people used to do. Two people clean a whole building for 120 residents. Every day I answer dozens of call lights because no other staff can help. Last year I worked 23 straight days. Eventually I tore my bicep tendon and was barely able to lift my arm. I have had to work light duty since. If we had adequate staff, I would not have gotten hurt. We just hired a woman named April. She loved the job and was really helping, but she just quit to take a job with the post office. They offered her a lot more than the $14.60 an hour she was making at the nursing home. I am not a policy expert, but I can tell you what it feels like in a nursing home. We don't get treated with respect. Our managers pay us as little as they can get away with. Right now, I'm fighting for a 10% raise that was promised to several of us. If I have to fight for what was promised to me, imagine what it's like for workers who don't have any voice at all. The problem is not just a lack of funding. The business press says lots of people are making money from nursing homes. To get more money for workers, you have to give them the power to set standards. I am lucky. I have a union. I get a voice. But too many workers don't have that chance. This bill would give them some say. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Stacy Miller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Stacy Miller, and I am with the City of Minneapolis, where I'm a sustainability program coordinator. I want to speak on behalf of the city and request your support for House File 2755. And also just a special thank you to the chair for sponsoring the bill and all the work that the Department of Labor and Industry put into it. The City of Minneapolis supports the language in House File 2755 that would require a minimum amount of infrastructure for electric vehicle charging in or near new significantly remodeled commercial and multifamily structures that provide on-site parking. On May 14th, 2021, the City of Minneapolis adopted an EV charging ordinance to support the city's transportation policies and encourage use of electric vehicles, making equitable access available throughout the city. But because current state statute prohibits municipalities from adopting an ordinance requiring these systems, the city was unable to fully implement our ordinance, and we worked with DLI to move this provision forward. This will enable transportation electrification to be more accessible to more people and is necessary to achieve greenhouse gas emissions reductions goals for both local governments and for the state. This will also save businesses and all levels of government money while helping ensure that the public is adequately and cost-effectively served with EV charging options. Additionally, we're just one of many local units of government who are supportive of the language in Article 6, Section 25 that would modify the energy code adoption process for new commercial buildings. Deploying energy efficiency measures at the time of construction is absolutely the most cost-effective time to make efficiency investments that will save money for property owners and renters, as well as reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Buildings account for approximately 40% of all the energy consumption in Minnesota, and advancing the energy code is essential for helping Minnesota meet its renewable energy targets and climate goals. And finally, with thousands of multifamily residential units being built statewide every single year, we mustn't leave out the generations of residents who come, who will live in these homes. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person on my list is Lauren Schothorst. I believe I was told she's also testifying in the Senate. We'll go back to her. Next, Toby Pearson. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Toby Pearson with Care Providers of Minnesota. Today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. The proposal in Article 3, starting at page 16.21, has vast reach and technical implications, so we appreciate the time to discuss our concerns. A Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board has been described as a training bill or an attempt to improve wages and staffing at our nursing homes. However, it does nothing to accomplish the most fundamental component needed to make these improvements, increased funding for nursing homes. Long-term care is currently down 20% of our workforce. Minnesota has an access problem. We have hospital backups, denials of admissions from the community, lack of workforce has been driving all of these. Last fall, in 1 month, we had 11,000 denials of admissions in just 1 month. Nursing homes have closed or laid away over 2,597 beds in the past 2 years. That's the equivalent of 50 medium-sized nursing homes closing. The main reason for these actions is the lack of workforce. Bottom line, nursing homes need increased funding to pay workers, not a workforce standards board. We have very serious concerns about the workforce standards proposal. First, this model has not been used in other states in these settings. Michigan did have an advisory group to the governor and to the legislature. They did not have rulemaking authority. The proposal sets up an appointed committee. The committee does not function like labor negotiations at a negotiating table where both sides have to come to an agreement. Instead, an appointed board can move forward to rulemaking without reaching consensus. The voting structure excludes the voice of providers by allowing any proposal to move forward without their vote. The governor's appointee and unions can vote to do whatever they want. Minnesota does have a model of management and workers working together that works in the form of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. We continue to have many questions on the budgeting and the facility payment implications of the decisions of the board. The bill as currently drafted will jeopardize the operations of the remaining nursing facilities across the state. As we have said many times, the forecast is not money in nursing facilities' pockets. They just don't get to spend it. It is a budgeting tool. It does not look at individual facility rates. When a facility will close because of the actions of this board and the inability to comply, what is their recourse? On the training of workers, what does it mean for a facility to ensure that the training occur? Does this mean that the employee must be fired if they don't comply with the training? For an employer, it is one thing to make sure employees are aware of the training and to pay them for an hour if they choose to attend the training. It is quite a different thing to mandate that employees take and the nursing homes have to ensure that they take it. The last item that I will raise at this time is the overly expansive term of other working conditions on line 20.26. The advocates say they don't intend to do certain things. The language does not limit the reach at all of this board. Instead, they could outvote the providers on anything and move it forward to rulemaking. As currently constructed, this appointed board can rewrite any or all of the employment standards for nursing homes through rulemaking without any legislative oversight or any provider votes. We oppose this section of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. Next person I have on my list is Nick Erickson. And again, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Erickson. I am the Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. Our members build the communities and places we all call home. We also operate the state's largest energy-efficient new construction program, Minnesota's Green Path, which has tested nearly 40,000 homes for energy efficiency since its inception. With our builders and code officials here in the state, we build on volume the most energy-efficient homes in the nation. Here today to share concerns with Section D on page 59. Really what we're talking about here is the expansion of the scope of the energy code. Now, for clarification, this does, as written, include both the residential code as well as the commercial code, which so it does touch multifamily as well as single-family housing. Our concerns are related to taking amendments that are considered outside the scope of the code. Really, it's setting up Minnesota to go on a path where it deviates from the accepted construction practices that we see across the country by taking things that are out of scope and have been potentially rejected by the expert code officials and building officials at the international level to move this stuff outside of the code. Also potentially sets up conflict with some other aspects of the code. Climate change resiliency is a rather vague and undefined term. Could be mitigating the effects of weather. That actually does not belong in the energy code. That is really a residential IRC or IBC building code. That's where that does belong, just from a purist standpoint. Section E and F we have no concerns with, but did want to highlight just that this does impact residential and that it does set us up to kind of deviate from the accepted practices that we see across the country. We already are more expensive by just about every measure on construction, including our energy code, and this does open the door to see that housing gap widen. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. John Boucher. Again, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Beshi. I'm with Associated Builders and Contractors. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments on House File 2755. ABC represents 330 commercial and industrial contractor members, as well as the 20,000 men and women they employ, who are part of the 76% of the construction industry in Minnesota that choose to not be part of a union. There are three provisions in this bill that I would like to provide some brief comments on. First and foremost, we remain opposed to the effort to mandate registered apprenticeship programs on contractors who help build, maintain, and repair Minnesota's refineries. It's been implied in prior hearings that ABC contractors and those who are opposed to this bill disregard the safety of their workers. Such assertions are not only extremely offensive, but are also completely untrue. ABC members take worker safety extremely seriously, and they pride themselves in their safety record for each and every employee. I've stated in previous committees why registered apprenticeship programs don't work for some of our members, but we've also seen real-life examples of how the completion of a registered apprenticeship program is not always synonymous with safety. For instance, the tragic explosion at the Minnehaha Academy in 2017 involved a worker who had completed a union-registered apprenticeship program. Despite completing that program, the National Transportation and Safety Board report found that worker was not qualified to work on the section of piping at issue. The bottom line is that registered apprenticeship programs are not the sole indicator of safety, and we are concerned with the precedent that this might create. We urge the committee to allow our contractor members to continue to utilize the training programs that work best for their business and produce high-quality multi-craft professionals. We also continue to have concerns with the funding for the Helmets to Hard Hats program. I want to be clear that we support efforts to recruit veterans into the construction industry, and our members are extremely active in their communities by doing outreach for the industry by attending career fairs, schools, and other events. However, our concern with the funding for this program is based on the exclusionary nature of it. Despite claims that have been made on the record this session, the program is not available to merit shop programs. Since this bill was originally heard in committee, we have reached out to Helmets to Hard Hats repeatedly to see how our members could participate in the program, and we have received no response to date. There is also an acknowledgement on their website that all the job postings listed on the job board come from employers who are signatory and in good standing with their construction union. If we are going to be spending taxpayer dollars to promote careers in construction, we should be promoting all pathways into the industry, not just those of a small segment of the construction industry. Finally, we are opposed to the increase in OSHA penalties that are included in this bill, as well as the annual increases based on inflation. The language in this bill in many cases will double the maximum fees that can be issued by OSHA. If the goal of this provision is to conform with federal OSHA, we would also recommend the committee consider conforming to federal OSHA standards for youth employment so that the state can truly be in conformance. In closing, we strongly encourage the committee to vote no on this bill as it is currently written, and we respectfully request that the bill be amended to address our concerns. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Next person I have is Joel Johnson. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name's Joel Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Like other building and construction trades, we strongly support House File 2755. We in the trades rely daily on the work done by the department, particularly when it comes to enforcing safe work site standards so our members can show up to work, do their jobs, and then return home safely to friends and family. The department also oversees the registered apprenticeship programs across the state to ensure that the workers on these sites have the proper skills and training to do these jobs safely. In addition, the department also plays a critical role in prevailing wage enforcement compliance. Prevailing wage laws exist in Minnesota to ensure projects funded with public money are built and maintained with the best trained labor available. And that the people working on these projects are paid at a level that reflects the real value of the work they do. With an estimated $7 billion plus of federal monies coming to the state in over the next handful of years, we'll be relying on the department to make sure that the workers are paid properly and fairly. This budget and the policies that accompany it will provide the department with the resources it needs to keep our members safe and ensure they are compensated fairly. Thank you for that. We look forward to continuing our work with all of you, Commissioner Bilsenbach and her staff. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person on my list is Melissa Heising. And again, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Heising, and I'm Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. The State Labor Federation, representing over 300,000 members of over 100,000 local unions across the state. I'm here to highlight our strong support for a number of items in House File 2755 as amended. This bill contains policy and funding that will protect and support working Minnesotans in all industries across the state. We support the provisions to strengthen workplace protections for agriculture, meat, and poultry processing workers, establish a nursing home workforce standards board, and improve safety for warehouse workers. We also applaud the creation of an ergonomics program to help prevent musculoskeletal disorders in healthcare, warehouse, and meatpacking facilities where such injuries are too common. We're happy to see the provisions to fund the Public Employee Relations Board, continue outreach efforts for the Women's Economic Security Act, improve workplace safety at oil refineries, conform to federal OSHA penalties, and support registered apprenticeship programs, including clean economy apprenticeships and apprenticeship readiness programs. We also support the increased funding for prevailing wage, education, and compliance. With massive federal funding for infrastructure coming to our state, it is important to ensure that funding creates jobs with family-sustaining wages into the future. In closing, I want to thank Chair Nelson, committee members, and staff for all their work on this important bill to address the needs of the working people of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heising. Is Ms. Shawhurst here yet? I don't see her. Is there anybody else that would like to speak on this bill from the audience? Seeing none, discussion. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I am under the impression and the knowledge that Ms. Shawhurst is on her way from the Senate. So that's one thing.
If she gets through, we will let her testify, yeah.
Thank you. Well, God willing, she'll make that tunnel fast. Mr. Chair, I will not be combative regarding the combative sports that we did not see the bill. It's 8 pages long. I come from a long line of boxers, the McDonald clan out in Watertown. We're a big bunch of boxers, McDonald's and Burns's. Matter of fact, my uncle Ed Joe McDonald was lightweight boxing champion in the late 50s. So I will take off my gloves and comment that we didn't see this particular bill, and it's not, again, anything to go in the ring with, but it certainly is 8 pages. It's quite intense. I think we all read it intently, and I think because of its nature, we probably should have seen this earlier as a bill, standalone bill, that we could have had testifiers. So I'm just curious as to why that was not the case.
Representative McDonald, it came to us late, and it came to us from the governor. It was part of his supplemental budget. The other piece you see in here is part of the governor's supplemental budget is the ergonomics piece that's in here. And so we can discuss those when we do the amendments on Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then regarding Thursday, as you probably are aware, we have a session at 12:30, and we're going to recess for caucus and then come back sometime after that. So what is the schedule, do you believe? I see the bills on the House floor doesn't seem to be too controversial, but that's just when all, you know, what hits the fan. But what's the plan, Mr. Chair?
Representative McDowell, it's my understanding, and I find something different, that we are going to come in, do the preliminary stuff, recess, and then for the committees to work. I think that's the email I got from the Speaker's office, is that, so we'll be having our committee hearing at 1 o'clock. My understanding.
Very good. Well, so the fight will be coming back here then Thursday after session or during
recess.
The fight
will be coming back here. The combative sports fight will come back here.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's all I have for now. Oh, yeah, I do have a question. But is Ms. Shawhurst here?
Ms. Shawhurst, did you? Thank you. Yes. We were waiting for you. Come on down and
thanks, Harry.
Welcome to the committee. Again, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologies, I was over testifying to the same bill in the Senate. My name is Lauren Shawhurst, and I'm the Director of Workplace Management and Workforce Development Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate the opportunity to once again address the committee and share our opposition to the House Labor Budget Bill and the numerous provisions imposing unnecessary new workplace regulations, workforce restrictions, and increased bureaucracy, record-keeping costs, and litigation risks on Minnesota industries, employers, and facilities. In order to keep my remarks brief, I have submitted full written testimony. To start, our members across all industries are committed to safety. Not only is this commitment grounded in good business sense, many industries are already highly regulated under very strong federal and state safety regulations. Minnesota businesses also don't have the luxury of considering labor policies, state tax and spending, and regulatory decisions separately in a vacuum. While we appreciate that the bill authors have worked with impacted industries and facilities to address significant scope and workability concerns throughout the legislative process, we are troubled that instead of making it easier for Minnesota businesses to remain viable, let alone grow, this bill takes the opposite approach. Separate from the direct costs impacts to employers, this bill requires millions of dollars in increased state spending to implement and enforce the numerous new provisions and standards when it has been demonstrated that our regulating entities have difficulty enforcing the full breadth of standards already in law. Specifically, I will highlight concerning new provisions found in Article 3, Article 4, Article 6, Section 17, Section 26 and 29, Article 8, and Article 9. While we appreciate the intentions of this legislation, we continue to be concerned about the feasibility and the cost of such proposals, along with the unintended consequences. The private right of action contained in Article 2, 3, 8, and 9 will lead to frivolous lawsuits and encourage the committee to remove it from these articles, as agency-led penalties and fines contain significant and substantial increases already. Furthermore, we do not believe that penalty increases should be on autopilot. Rather, these increases should require legislative debate and a vote, as this bill is doing through the underlying penalty provisions in Article 6. The Chamber supports an approach that limits additional cost burdens and unnecessary mandates on employers who are doing their best to comply with the existing complement of state and federal workplace standards and keep Minnesotans employed. Because the totality of this bill would impede Minnesota's economic competitiveness, we respectfully encourage a no vote on the DE amendment and appreciate the opportunity to share this opposition with the committee today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. And again, is there anyone else that was in the Senate that wishes to speak on the bill, testify? Representative McDonald, anything else you need to say, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing I need to say, no. There's a big, this place after 13 years, I know the difference between needs and wants. But I would want maybe Commissioner Blissenbach to come to the table for just a couple questions for the Commissioner, Dolly.
Commissioner Blissenbach, we've got time, so yes. Commissioner Blissenbach. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Blissenbach, thanks for your good work. And Dolly, see, I was trying to find anywhere in the material in the handout as far as some FTEs. I'm just curious, are there some more full-time employees with this bill? And then what is the increase in the funding or the appropriation from the last biennium?
Okay.
Commissioner, and I think the increase, our budget target was $8 million. $8 million. It's not one of the smaller ones on the list. And so that's, but Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald's, I may have to get some help on the total number of FTEs that are covered, but it was covered in our budget proposal. I have it broken out by item, but I don't have a total in front of me, so I apologize on that. And then as far as total overall spending, it because we are funded at DLI by different funds, there's a different total for each fund. So the work comp fund, the general fund, the Construction Codes and Licensing Fund, and the Workforce Development Fund.
And Representative McDonald, the $8 million is our general fund target.
My turn.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, Commissioner. Maybe staff, nonpartisan staff, or either one that would know in the bill if there are any full-time employees.
Ms. Roberts.
New additional, yes.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I would have to look that up also. I don't know that off the top of my head. Clearly, there are new FTE being funded, but I don't know the numbers.
Well, maybe we can get that information before the Thursday meeting.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And the only reason I ask is because we had heard in testifying that there was Dolly perhaps didn't have enough of the investigators to investigate some of these egregious workforce safety issues with employees. So employers. So I was just curious if there was an addition of full-time employees, if that would help the Dolly do more investigating. And again, it's all hearsay. Some of the testimony is hearsay. We don't know if they contacted if the workforce safety issues and those issues were contacted to Dolly. So, but if there is an increase, would that help in some of the investigations?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I can answer that question. So, yes, there are increases in FTE in a number of these proposals. I don't know the total combined, but I do know, for instance, the prevailing wage education and compliance, that has an increase of 7 FTE. The OSHA ergonomics has an increase for OSHA inspectors. And the answer to the question about will this help with our education and our enforcement at the Department of Labor and Industry, the answer is definitely yes. As we add resources, we are able to take on more calls, more investigations, more education, working with employers to develop their policies and practices to ensure compliance. So every amount of resource we receive at the department does have an impact on the laws we enforce.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioner. I think that's definitely appreciate the answer, and I think that'll be very important. I hope that in the future, maybe you have this already, that Dolly can record any instances that there may be a violation within an employer. Because we do hear a lot of hearsay of there was a violation, and oftentimes that Dolly's not even aware of this. And it could be just a fact that there was a breach in safety or protocol from the employee or employer, and Dolly wasn't even notified. And then for legislation is then crafted to deal with that. Does that make a little sense in that respect, that each call can be documented to ensure that the validity of the call or any laws being broken?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, we do have pretty robust record keeping and case management systems within the department. OSHA does track the number of complaints we receive, the number of inspections that we conduct. And when I did the department overview, we did touch on number of inspections, number of complaints. And in labor standards, we also talked about the number of wages recovered over the past 5 years. I think it's in the realm of over $7 million. So we do have some of those numbers, and I'm happy to provide more on that front. Our OSHA inspectors, for instance, conduct about 60 inspections a year, but we have 50 of them for the entire state. So that's a fraction of the number of workplaces that exist in the state, but we are out there. We do have those numbers.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, your word is good for me. You don't have to provide anything further. We got enough work to do. Last question, and then I'm done, Mr. Chairman. The Amazon bill, of course, they laid off, 700 or close to 800 folks. And that was a big bill. That's a big bill. It's in this bill here, and I think there's a standalone bill coming as well. So I think it would be important if there was documentation of that, because legislation was drafted, and we're going to pass laws and put in state statutes based on the Amazon issue. So if there was any, I guess, documentation on that from Dolly, just to help lawmakers, help us draft bills, would be helpful.
Representative Blissenbach, and I think, and Representative McDonald, from what I read on the one that closing, Amazon was leasing that building, and their lease was coming up, and they were moving their operations to a building they owned, as opposed to one they were leasing. And what I read and what I saw in the news is that they were offered jobs at the new place. But Representative, or Commissioner Blissenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald. I appreciate that question, because much of the testimony related to the Warehouse Worker Protection Bill has been about the things that bill is addressing that are not currently addressed in OSHA standards and Minnesota OSHA law in the state of Minnesota, like giving notice to employees of certain requirements that they have to meet, as well as other notifications. So we have had input and have been offering technical advice related to that bill. And in order to move forward on some of the things that are not currently covered under OSHA regulations.
Any further questions? If not, members, because of staff issues, that the amendments are due at 1 o'clock, but we're going to be a little lenient, not a lot lenient, because our staff people, Ms. Scholand is covering multiple committees, and she's covering us as a backup. And so we'll give you a little bit on the amendments coming up for next Thursday, a little leeway tomorrow, but not 5 o'clock. I mean, just get your amendments in and let the staff get done with what they need to get done. So if not, anything else we need to committee? If not, we're adjourned for today.